I woke up every morning to be the fittest man on earth. I wanted to win at all costs, no matter what. I sacrificed a lot. When I woke up, every breath I took, every waking hour, my goal was to win the CrossFit Games, and I sacrificed a lot. Would I change that? Probably not.
All right, welcome back, or welcome to the Finding Mastery podcast. I'm Michael Gervais, and by trade and training, I'm a sport and performance psychologist and also the co-founder of Compete to Create. And my partner there is head coach Pete Carroll, the Seattle Seahawks, where we're taking his insights about how to switch on a culture and my insights about how to train the minds of people who want to be their very best. And we're taking those practices into business, and it's been phenomenal. It's been a blast. Okay, and the whole idea of this podcast is to learn from people who are on the path of mastery to better understand what they're searching for, to understand their psychological framework, which is how they understand themselves and events and basically their worldview. And then we also want to dig to understand the mental skills that they've used to build and refine their craft. Finding Mastery is brought to you by Facet. When we think about what it takes to thrive and to live a life of flourishing, there's no doubt that financial wellness is a big part of that equation. There's lots of ways to manage your money. And here's one that you might be interested in. Facet is the next generation of personalized financial planning. They're on a mission to make expert financial advice accessible to the masses. So Facet provides you with flexible access to a team of financial planners and a team of experts across retirement planning, tax strategy, estate planning, and more. And the best part here is that instead of taking a percentage of your portfolio, Facet only charges an affordable flat membership fee and doesn't charge you to invest with them. This is extremely rare for the industry. As you probably know, most financial advisors charge you a percentage of your assets. And even if it's only 1%, those fees can really add up over the course of your lifetime. And because you're listening to this podcast, Facet is hooking you up with a great offer. When you sign up today, Facet will waive the $250 enrollment fee for new annual members. And they have an epic limited time offer on top of that. To learn more, just head to facet.com/FM. Again, this one is a little different. That's Facet, facet.com/FM to waive your enrollment fee and to learn more about their limited time offer. A little disclosure here. Facet Wealth Inc., Facet, is an SEC registered investment advisor headquartered in Baltimore, Maryland. This is not an offer to sell securities or investment, financial, legal, or tax advice. Past performance is not a guarantee of future performance. Terms and conditions apply. Finding Mastery is brought to you by Bubs Naturals. Like you, I am mindful about what I put into my body. So for me, it usually comes down to ingredients and simplicity. The shorter the list, the better. And that's why I've been loving Bubs Naturals. Bubs creates products with high quality, all natural ingredients that are designed to help us get after the adventures in life. For years, I've been a huge fan of their Hydrate or Die electrolyte mix. I mean, that's a fun title for a product, isn't it? It only has 6 total ingredients. It's packed with electrolytes. I love the taste. No added sugar, no artificial flavors, none of that stuff. It's great for post-workout recovery. That's when I use it. And I also use it during long periods of travel, which I've been doing a lot lately. And so thank you for the hydration here. And a ton of athletes that I know swear by them too. They're currently in just about every MLB locker room. They work closely with the Red Sox, the Yankees, I know the Rangers, Cardinals, Diamondbacks, and many more, of course. I'd love for you to go check them out. I think they're doing a really nice job. Just head to bubsnaturals.com/findingmastery and enter the code FINDINGMASTERY at checkout for 20% off your first purchase. Again, that's Bubs Naturals, B-U-B-S naturals.com/findingmastery with the code FINDINGMASTERY for 20% off your first purchase. Okay, now this week's conversation is with Rich Froning Jr., dubbed as the fittest man in history after winning 4 back-to-back individual CrossFit Games championships back in 2011 to 2014. He's also won the Worldwide Open for 3 consecutive years from 12 to 2014. And when he retired from individual competition after the 2014 season, he captained his affiliate team, CrossFit Mayhem Freedom, to two back-to-back affiliate cup championships in 2015 and 2016. And so when I mentioned to a couple of my friends that Rich was coming on, they raised their eyebrows with this stoke and they nodded. And one of them said, that's going to be one for sure. And so Rich's point of view comes from being recognized as the best in the world in his craft. And so that is easy to follow and understand, but it's a gem, how he puts together the way that he organizes his life and how he thinks about it. And he understands winning flat out. And he also understands the cost associated with it. So in Rich's words, he says that to be the best in the world at anything, you're not balanced. You can't be balanced. And so with that thought ahead of time, you know, I think it's good to wrestle with that. Would you still pursue, or do you still want to pursue being the best in the world? That is very different than being your best. There is a difference between those two. And I think it's a great question. And it's why I love these conversations so much. They really make me think about who I am and what I value most. And I hope it does the same for you. And so with that, let's jump right into this conversation with Rich Fronning Jr. Rich, how are you?
Mike, thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is great. You have done you have an amazing body of work. So congratulations on what you've done.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I want to spend some time with you and I want to really understand your path. I want to understand how you see the world. And I also want to understand the mental skills that you've used to build, basically your body and your ability to perform consistently on the world stage. So, you know, when we think of trying to understand who you are, just to get a basic framework, what are the things that you can help me understand? Like, what are the experiences and the places you've been? Maybe you go way back to early history, whatever. Like, how can I better understand? What can you share with me?
Yeah. Oh, man. I mean, I can go back all the way to the beginning where I was born in Michigan. My family, there's on my mom's side, I have 32 first cousins. 25 of us are boys. So it's very a competitive atmosphere basically since the day I was born. And then on my dad's side is a lot smaller, but just hardworking. Both sides of my family are super hardworking. My mom was mom's family were farmers. Irish Catholic farmers. So, you know, he had to have help in the field. So there was my mom has 9 brothers and sisters. My dad had 2 siblings. And then we moved to Tennessee, I guess, when I was 4 and a half. And the rest of my family still lives in Michigan. But we live in Tennessee, stayed in Tennessee. And then I grew up playing all kinds of sports. Sports were kind of my life growing up. I played baseball. Baseball turned into my mainstay. Played football for a little while till I dislocated my shoulder and had to have labrum surgery in high school. And ended up playing baseball and a little bit in college. Got to college baseball. Wasn't really all I thought it was going to be. Turned more into a job than anything. And so then from there, I came back home. And in Cookeville, they had this program. It was called the Student Firefighter Program. So they paid my tuition. And I worked as a full-time firefighter. And they paid my tuition through college. And from there, one of my professors, I was getting my undergrad in exercise science. And my professor was like, hey, you like to work out. And you're a firefighter. And a lot of military police fire are using CrossFit. So you should try it out. And kind of the rest is history from there. Started competing and signed up. Didn't really have, you know, we just really just started doing CrossFit to work out. Didn't really know there was anything about competition. Well, then we saw some videos about the CrossFit games. And from there, I signed up, went to sectionals. You had to get top 15. I ended up winning my sectional, which I was not planning on doing. I was just, you know, wanted to see what it was going to be like for the first year and then maybe come up with a plan for the next year. And then won my sectional, went to regionals. You had to get top 5 in regionals, so honestly didn't think I had a chance there. Ended up winning my regional, went to the CrossFit Games, was in first going into the final event, and fell off of the rope in the final event. And basically, I lost the CrossFit Games by 3 points, which is 3 positions over the whole weekend. We probably did 10 or 12 events. And so it was a tough space for me. And like I said, I had some good mentors and some people that kind of pushed me. And faith had always been a driving force in my life, but never the front of my life. And really prioritized my relationship, I think, with the Lord. And from then on, kind of did it for that purpose versus glorifying myself, and won the CrossFit Games 4 times after that. And as an individual, then retired as an individual, and we've won twice on a team and got second on a team as well. So that's the short of 30 years of life there.
Congratulations. Like,
thank you.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you came from, I don't know, some sort of environment where there was lots of testosterone.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, and I'm wondering how that shaped your competitive approach. I could fill in a lot of gaps and stories, but like, what was that like growing up with all those cousins?
Yeah. You know, and it was kind of tough because we moved here when I was 4. And so, I didn't get to spend it. We went up to Michigan probably 4 or 5 times a year, sometimes more. So I got to spend a lot of time with my cousins, but, there was always that you were always comparing stats, scores, whatever you were doing. And anytime we were together, it was always a competition. You know, my aunts and uncles have ponds in Michigan because you can actually swim in those. In Tennessee, you don't want to swim in a pond because usually there's other creatures you don't want to mess with. But in Michigan, you know, the ponds are for swimming. And I remember one of the first, you know, just things I remember competing as a child was we were probably 5 or 6, and our aunts or uncles would be like, hey, all right, you're going to race around the pond. And, you know, it was maybe 300, 400 meters. And so I just, from an early age, everything was always a competition. Not just between us, but I feel like sometimes our aunts and uncles and my dad and mom, you know, it's like, oh, let's see who can do this the best, who can do this the fastest. I mean, partly now having kids, I realized they were just trying to drain some energy. But as a kid, you feel like, you know, I'm carrying the family banner type thing. So, you know, that led to a lot of the competitiveness that I think comes from deep within.
Okay. And then how do you see competitiveness? How do you define being a competitor? And there's basically 2 basic frameworks, right? And So how do you define it?
Man, to be honest, it's tough for me to like, it's hard for me to define because I don't really ever think about it. It's just who I, like, it's a part of who I am. Like, it's not something that I do. It happens, you know. It's not something I think about. And it's been hard for me to kind of separate those in things that I should compete at and things I shouldn't compete at. Like, I shouldn't compete with my wife on some things when I, it's been a hard thing to, over the last couple of years, to realize, hey, that is part of who I am, but I've got to kind of channel that and filter that to make sure that I'm competing in the right areas and not competing at things that I shouldn't be competing at.
Are you competing to be the best, better than the other, or are you competing to be your best?
Oh man, that's a tough one too. So when I was an individual, so now it's a little bit different. Now that we now have 3 kids, and when I was an individual for the 5 years that I did it, I woke up every morning to be the fittest man on earth. I wanted to win at all costs, no matter what. I sacrificed a lot. When I woke up, every breath I took, every waking hour, my goal was to win the CrossFit Games. And I sacrificed a lot. Would I change that? Probably not. You know, there's some things that I wish I could have done better, but
what were some sacrifices?
Well, I mean, you know, just relationship stuff. You know, with my wife, there was times where it'd be 8 or 9 o'clock at night, and my just competitiveness and also just that will to compete and thinking that somebody else is doing something that I'm not. I would go out to the garage at 8, 9 o'clock at night and, you know, row a couple thousand meters just to get some extra work in. And so, you know, I'm sure that at the time, she probably wasn't real happy with it. I think she appreciates it now because, you know, we get to live a life that we can provide for our kids, and she can, you know, spend as much time as she wants with them and do all that. So, but, you know, there was vacations, family vacations that I would, you know, either be preoccupied with training or would just skip altogether, or family function. Not really family functions I would most of the time attend, but like friends, you know, cookouts and stuff like that. I was obsessive for at least 4 or 5 years. And then when we adopted our first little girl, I just made the decision that to be a father and to and to be the father that I needed to be and wanted to be, I needed to step away from the individual side, because even when I wasn't competing, I was still thinking about competing, and I knew I couldn't do that. So now my goal is to be the best father that I can be.
If wow, okay. So, all right. It sounds like your first effort was to be the best, better than everyone else. And there was a bit of an underlying anxious model. Like if there's somebody out there that might be working, so I'm feeling anxious right now, so I'm going to go do a little extra work. And then you talked about some obsessiveness, right? And so I'm wondering, okay, none of that sounds unfamiliar to me, but I'm wondering for you, okay, if for you, if that was, it's almost like an addiction. It's almost if we took, you know, and if we replaced fitness with alcohol, would you have needed to go to rehab?
Oh yeah. No, I still struggle with that. You know, there's times where I'm like, I feel better. I honestly do feel better if I move every single day. It's better for my mood. It's just part of who I am is, and also, you know, being a competitor, but to move, that's something that I've learned is something that I have to do. However, working out 3 or 4 times a day is not something I need to do, but I definitely have an obsessive personality. You know, there's might be a little bit of in my genetics, some of that is substance abuse, but I've never once used drugs or anything like that. So I think my outlet and my obsession and that is working out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I want to get a picture of, if you're working out 3 times a day, what was the volume and intensity that you were looking at on a regular basis? And I know there's, you know, peaking and ebbs and flows of it, but on a regular basis, when you're in kind of the thick of training, what does the volume and intensity look like?
I never set an alarm. My biggest thing when I was training was to sleep as much as I could. So I'd probably sleep anywhere from 9 to 11 hours a night if I could. Blackout curtains, all that. So I'd get up, you know, 9, 10 o'clock-ish, sometimes a little earlier. And then I'd go, I had a garage gym at the house that I would just train in. And I would be in there literally from 10 o'clock in the morning until probably 5 or 6 at night. And then sometimes I'd come in.
What were you doing out there?
I had all kinds of stuff, just abusing my body, basically.
No, seriously. That was training?
Yeah. You know, I mean, there would be some minor breaks in there in between workouts. You know, I was doing a bunch of interval type stuff, CrossFit, you know, pure CrossFit type Metcons, some gymnastics skill work. You know, it wasn't like straight working out the entire time, but there's probably 30 minutes to an hour in between each of those, just kind of hanging out. But I was out in the garage just doing my thing.
What was your relationship with food?
I didn't eat enough, to be honest. I had supplement sponsors and stuff like that. So a lot of my calories were coming from a shake or whatever, because, and this is another thing that I've had to kind of rein in, is if I get busy and start doing something, I will forget to eat. If I don't think about food, I don't get hungry, and I just kind of just go throughout the day without even thinking about it. So,
you're almost 200 pounds, right? Like I've read some of your stats, 5'9", 180, 190 pounds, somewhere in there.
Yeah. Yeah. And so at night I would just kind of any and everything that I could get a hold of. And if I was hungry, I would eat you know, didn't really worry about, you know, quality or quantity. I was just eating anything and everything just to kind of make up for the calories that I'd burnt that day.
Not optimized. No, somehow it works.
This is not a thing that I recommend to any of our members or anybody that I talk to now, but you know, at the time it worked and it was who I was, and that's what it was.
What was money like?
I was making really good money. Contracts, sponsors and stuff like that. Me and my wife bought our first house after the 2011 games. I've been blessed enough that I've never really had any debt. But we don't spend outside of our means. You know, we did build my wife's dream house. But it's on 70 acres and where I wanted to live and up by where I grew up. It's up on a mountain and my kids can go out and play and I don't have to worry about that now. But at the time it was just, we bought a foreclosure home and paid cash for it and, you know, did some minor upgrades and then sold it and then, bought this land and now have a beautiful home and a beautiful barn and, something the kids can play with. So
awesome.
Yeah, you know, we don't really, we live in Cookeville, Tennessee, so it's cheap to live here. And like I said, my wife's really good about, we don't really live outside our means, I don't feel like, so.
Okay, so go back. So first games that you entered, was that 2011
or 2010?
2010. Okay, so take me back to 2002. Were you training and were you fit? Or was that like now scrawny and little? Like what was the transformation arc look? What did it look like for you?
In 2002?
Yeah.
Oh, in high school? Oh, mm-hmm. Man. In high school, I was – so I – my freshman year, I really got into working out my eighth grade year. What they would do is they would take – after school, you could take the bus over to the high school and you could go to football practice and lift weights and stuff like that. So I really got into fitness then. I can remember working out in the living room, you know, with – my dad had some like old Sears crappy dumbbell stuff. And I really got into working out. I think honestly – one of the reasons I got into working out was I was in middle school a little bit. I wasn't fat, but I was a little chubbier compared to like some of my cousins that were, if you look at all of them, they look like they've come out of the movie 300. And so I think part of that had something to do with that growing up. And then I just really got into it in high school and baseball was my thing. And I wanted to get better at baseball. So I started doing a bunch more strength training and stuff like that. In high school. So I was 120 pounds in my freshman year of high school. And I have the sheet where my high school baseball coach was like, all right, I want you to gain 15 pounds. I want you to 135 pounds at the end of the year. Well, at the end of the year, I was 121 pounds. And then my sophomore year, I made it up to, I think, 130 to start the season. And then from I hit kind of a growth spurt in, I guess, it was my junior year. And my junior year of high school, right before when I was playing football, went to recover an onside kick and just tore my labrum, subluxed it. And the doctor was like, you need to have surgery. Let's go ahead and start that process. Well, I was like, nah, I'm not going to do that because my junior year is kind of – that's when you get offers to play college ball. So I was like, I'm going to hold off on that. And I'm going to try to just rehab it myself and see what I can do. So got back, started playing first scrimmage of the season that year. I went to dive into first and dislocated my shoulder again. And so played the rest of the season. I probably subluxed. I didn't really tell the coach. Subluxed it probably 10 or 11 times. And so before games, I wouldn't even throw to warm up. I would just kind of get a TheraBand and try to strengthen my rotator cuff enough to where it wouldn't literally fall out of place. And so I was taking probably the higher than the recommended dosage of ibuprofen at the time. And after that year, I probably got up to about 165, 170 pounds and then had to have shoulder surgery. So my junior or my senior year, I was back down to like 145, 150. So I really didn't start putting on weight until probably a year after my senior year where I got up to about 180 right when I first started doing CrossFit.
Okay. Where do you find your natural weight is? Do you have a sense of that anymore?
I'd say probably 195, 190. If I didn't work out and, or if I didn't, do as much strength training and stuff, it might drop down a little bit. But, to be honest, I think, my dad's about 160, 165-ish. Both of my parents are your average weight. Neither one of them are overweight whatsoever. Pretty fit. No, neither one of them. My mom works out a little bit. My dad, he says his CrossFit is his daily job. So he's kind of he's into everything all the time. And my mom works her butt off too. So they're always moving.
Finding Mastery is brought to you by UCAN. One important way to take control of your metabolic fitness is to fuel with foods that help regulate your blood sugar. It's key for your metabolism to work effectively and to maintain sustainable energy levels. So many sports drinks and energy products are filled with sugar or fast-digesting carbs. And while those give you a quick flash of energy, it ends up being short-lived and can lead to a crash. UCAN has taken a different approach, and that's why they're loved by so many elite athletes that I know. Their products deliver a sustained release of long-lasting energy that helps you maintain sharper focus, curb hunger cravings, to help you exercise harder without spiking blood sugar. They've developed a patent low-glycemic carbohydrate called Live Steady. It's derived from a complex starch instead of sugar, And its efficacy is backed by extensive research and clinical trials, which I know you love. A few members of the team here at Finding Mastery use UCAN on a regular basis while preparing for marathons and other endurance events, and they've loved it too. They say it's a game changer in their training and performance. Whether you're an intense exerciser or recreationally active or just looking for an energy boost to get you through the day, I hope that you'll consider checking out UCAN as a smarter way to fuel. You can try a variety of UCAN products for free when you head to ucan.co/findingmastery. You just pay for shipping, they'll cover the rest. Again, that's UCAN, spelt UCAN.co/findingmastery to try a selection of UCAN products for free. Finding Mastery is brought to you by Apollo Neuro. I am really excited about what Apollo Neuro is building. If you haven't had the chance yet, I highly recommend that you go check out the conversation I had with their co-founder, Dr. David Rabin, on the podcast. It is well worth a listen. Unlike traditional wearables that simply track your biometrics, Apollo is doing it totally differently. Apollo Neuro is designed to actively improve your health by enhancing sleep, relaxation, energy, and focus. So how's it work? Developed by neuroscientists and physicians, Apollo delivers these soothing little vibrations. They call them Apollo vibes, that are like music your body can feel. More rapid vibrations help to improve your energy and focus, while the slower vibrations help to promote rest and digest in your body. And the best part for me, they're grounded in good science. Apollo has been tested by thousands of users in clinical and real-world trials. I would love for you to give it a go. It's making a meaningful difference in my life. And because you're listening to this podcast, you can receive an exclusive 15% off an Apollo wearable. Just head to apolloneuro.com/findingmastery and use the code findingmastery at checkout. This is an exclusive offer. It's only for us here at Finding Mastery. So be sure to use the code at checkout. Again, that's Apollo, A-P-O-L-L-O, Apollo Neuro, N-E-U-R-O, apolloneuro.com/findingmastery, or use the code findingmastery at checkout for 15% off your purchase. People and events can deeply shape us. And, you know, can you talk about a person that has had some of the most influence in your life? And it doesn't mean that's the only person, but whoever comes up right now that, you know, or you can talk about an event for sure.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've got a bunch of people and a bunch of events, to be honest. Both my parents obviously shaped who I am for sure. They're the hardest workers in the room anytime, anywhere you go. Always made sure that we were doing, you know, if we weren't finding ourselves something to do and we were inside, they were going to find us something to do. So, you know, we had some chores, and at the time I hated it growing up, but really appreciate it now. Just the work ethic that they instilled in me. I had a baseball coach in high school that kind of was my, became my second father figure type outside my dad. Was the first guy that to kind of be like that. He was, or is, Coach Chaffin. He came my junior year. So I had three high school baseball coaches in 4 years, but he was the last one. He was awesome. Still a good friend of mine. Still just all the same thing, the hard work and the mental toughness and all that stuff. And then as far as events go, my grandmother, who was I was super close to, passed away from a heart attack, kind of unexpected. They were lived in Michigan and then moved to Tennessee. And while they were working on her house, she had a heart attack and passed away, just completely unexpected. So she was very influential in my faith. And also my mom's mom is super influential in my faith. She's still around. And then my cousin, Donnie, who was basically my best friend, we were 12 days apart. He passed away in 07. And so that one was a little bit tough as well, because he was, got in a car accident, the night before New Year's Eve. So that one was really hard.
Is that when you look back in your life, I don't know how to really ask that question in light of what you just shared. Was that the hardest thing that you've been through, or have there been other things that have been really challenging?
Yeah, those two for sure were the hardest things that I've ever been through, is, you know, losing my grandma and then also losing my cousin. They were, like I said, he was my best friend. And so It made you just realize, you know, when you're that young, and me being a firefighter, you know, I knew I wasn't invincible. But to see that happen, man, it just woke me up for sure.
How did it change you?
Oh, man, it just made you appreciate family a lot more. And just with relationships, you know, you kind of – and, you know, I kind of – it sucks now to think back that I had a girlfriend at the time that was – it wasn't a healthy relationship, and she was super jealous of him. So I didn't really get to talk to him as much the last year that we were around, so – or that he was around. And so I really kind of kicked myself for that and realized that not to let stuff like that get in the way because you never know what's going to happen.
Mm. And how do you rectify that now? Do you have like things that you do to make sure that you don't make that have that same pattern?
Yeah, I think it's just been kind of over the years of making sure that doesn't happen. It's just become a more natural thing to do. You know, it's not – I don't have to think about it anymore. But for the first couple of years, it was like, all right, you know, when – somebody that I'm close to respond or says something and I, you know, either brush it off or just, oh, I'll get back to it. I'm like, no, let's get to it now. So I've been a little bit better about that.
Okay. Got it. Yeah. 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 And so there's an insight that I think it holds up for me is that it's pain that creates change for people. Uncomfortableness is how we grow, but pain is the reason we change.
Yeah.
And you sound like you would say, oh, well, you did. You said, yeah. I mean, so yeah. Okay. And then In that frame, like when we're talking about kind of the heavy stuff, mm-hmm. you sound like I'm just getting a sense that you have lots of passion in your life. Like you're on, you're going. And maybe that's not the case, but when we're talking about emotions, it's hard for men to talk about this. But when was the last time you just let go and cried?
I can't remember. My wife gets mad at me about this sometimes. I just don't. Like I'll get kind of that choked up feeling in your throat, but I don't cry that much. I couldn't tell you the last time I cried. I actually got in trouble at our wedding because I didn't cry. I get more teared up and get that feeling about like my kids and stuff like that now. But then like, you know, Hillary just – I don't understand happy crying personally. I just – she's like – you know, you get so happy that you cry and I just can't get – can't wrap my brain around that. It's just never happened.
Yeah.
And so – but yeah, no, I don't think I really pin up emotion, to be honest. I'll talk about stuff and I don't mind talking about stuff to the right people. You know, I'm not going to open up and share to like somebody that I'm not super close with, but it doesn't, I don't feel like I'm just balled up emotion all the time, but I am constantly moving and there's constantly stuff, you know, pushing and pulling in different directions because I got a lot going on now.
Yeah, you do. Okay, so you're one of the best for a long time in your industry. How do you get in your own way? I get how you developed it, but what do you do to get, like, I don't know, where you screw yourself up in some kind of way?
Daily. you know, it's just, it's a constant battle. You got to kind of, in CrossFit, I mean, the beauty about what we do is you're always working on something. And then when you work on something that you're not great at, other things start to kind of, fall apart as well. So it's, or, you know, if you're working on a strength or on a weakness, some of your strengths start to kind of fall off. So you've got to kind of, you got to balance everything. And so I think it's almost a good metaphor for life. But to be the best in the world at anything, you're not balanced. You can't be balanced. And so that's something that I've kind of had to work on, is being a little bit more balanced, you know, helping out. Because like I said, we run a gym here, and luckily I have Yvette, a lady that runs the gym, my cousin who is the head coach here. And, you know, I've got a great team that kind of make sure that I don't screw up things too bad. I'm more of the ceremonial leader here at the gym, because I'm still competing and still, you know, we have a team that that we're trying to win with, and so it's hard, it's tough to make sure that I'm doing all the things that I need to do, and it's a constant battle to just run checks and make sure that I'm not screwing up in certain areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And then, so there was a dip from 2016 to 17 where, you know, you're one or two in the world for a long time. Mm-hmm. And then there was a dip that you recently had. What happened there? What was this? Maybe it was the birth of your child. Maybe it was the building of the gym. Maybe it was you just didn't want to do it anymore.
I mean, I think I'm not really concentrating on being the fittest on the earth. You know, like that's not my like I said, for years I woke up and that was my goal, is to win the CrossFit Games every year. And so, you know, and being on a team now is a little bit different than being an individual. You know, there's, yes, I want to be well-rounded, but if I can get better in certain areas, then I can do that. So, yeah, and I think it's just I'm in a different part of my life than some of these guys that are competing as individuals now.
So that hunger that you had back in 2010 and 11 it's just changed. It's spread out a little bit.
Exactly. It's not all focused on one thing. Now it's kind of like that passion is a lot broader and a lot, you know, it's not, like I said, it's not so laser focused on one thing.
What were you searching for with that laser focus?
Yeah, I don't know. So and this was something in 2010 that I wanted to be the best in the world, because I wanted to make my family proud. I wanted to make people in Cookeville proud of who I was and what I'd done and all that stuff. And when I got, and I'd let CrossFit become my identity, and it become who I'd thought who I was. And so when I'd gotten so close to, you know, and everybody's like, you got second, you know, there's nothing to hang, you know, hang your head about. But it ate at me. Like I hated getting second. Like I was not in a good space for a couple months. And luckily, like I said, I didn't want to work out anymore. I was kind of like, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't like CrossFit. I don't enjoy this. And so, like I said, luckily I had a good group I started actually working at Tennessee Tech as a strength coach. And I, you know, like I said, my faith has always been part of my life, but has never been the center of my life. And in 2010, I just had some guys that kind of started questioning, you know, why I was doing what I was doing, and kind of made me realize that, you know, I'd been blessed with the gifts that I'd been given, I think through God, and my way to glorify Him was to show people and tell people all I could about Him from that. And that kind of was the shift that I needed, and the swing, and to get outside of myself and not make it about me.
Okay, that's part of the dark side, I think, of elite performance, is that narrow focus, loss of identity, consumption with outcome.
Yep.
And that the outcome defines us. And so you glossed it over. Like you I'm listening to you going, oh yeah, oh yeah, okay. So you hit all the marks, but I would venture to say that until you taste, if you have the laser focus and that deep passion, and then you taste success, then you taste the agony of the other side of it, that meaning loss, that success and loss are both, you know, is that one of the great poems in sport or in life is about that, treating those two imposters the same.
Yep.
So what have you come to learn? Like I know that what you just said was the intellectual version, but there's a darkness that's
right
in that. And then, okay, paint that darkness just a little bit so that I can feel what you did to get through that. And I heard what you said, which is I had some peer groups, you know, some friends, they challenged me, but there's deeper work that took place.
Yeah. So, I mean, so what I did, from there is I just kind of, you know, as kind of cliche as it sounds, I started reading the Bible and, started in Matthew and just started reading about Jesus and why I believed what I believed, and just got a little bit more firm in that, and kind of would fall back on that on days where I didn't want to do what I, you know, felt like I was supposed to be doing. And like I said, I had good people around me, good examples of some of the stuff that they'd been saying. But also, I mean, there were days where I didn't want to work out, and I just kind of tried to remember why I started doing it in the first place. And I just enjoyed working out. And so, it just, like I said, and then it just, I guess naturally just kind of the competitive side of it came back, and I wanted to win. And in 2011, it just, everything kind of fell into place from there.
So going through that, being the best, finding a dip, maintaining it, dipping off a little bit, but spreading out your interests, right? And there's no critique by me. This is just like the pattern. And now you're in more of a, you're competing, and then you've hired a head coach. If you could install a belief set or a belief pattern, or let's just call it a belief. If you could install a belief into your head coach that he could install into the athletes, or if you could just spread it out and give it right to your athletes, what would that belief be? What would you want to install?
Just to correct, we don't really have like a head coach for our team. Okay. I was talking about Darren's the head coach at the gym for
at
our
the
members.
Gym. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. But I mean, I think honestly our team, so it used to be three guys, three girls on the team. Now it's two guys and two girls. They switched that this year. And so what we did was we now have two teams. And so, you know, we just, to be honest, they're all great individuals, but they're also, you know, they know it's bigger than themselves. And so everybody on the team works really well together. We have fun. We show up, everybody works hard, but you have to enjoy what you're doing. If you're not enjoying what you're doing, there's going to be days that you're not going to enjoy what you do. But if it's so just, you know, you're getting run down every day, that it kind of loses that fun. It just turns into a, you know, a job, I guess. And so we try to make every day interesting, try to make every day different. You know, there's some days that we're going to have to do things that we don't really enjoy, and we get that. And it works. We've done, like I said, we won twice on a team, in 2015, 2016, and then last year, 2017, we got second. So that's been it's been our motivating factor, definitely, for a year, is getting second. Nobody on this team likes to get second, for sure.
Okay, so it's easy, I think, to say just enjoy it. And you can't tell someone to have fun. You can say it, but that doesn't mean they're going to have. So what do you do, like, underneath the surface to be able to create an environment or to help people create thinking patterns to enjoy themselves? Is it as simple as you just have a lot of fun and that becomes infectious?
Well, I was captain of baseball team, always been in kind of a leadership role in anything that I've done. And I've never been much of a rah-rah, you know, get them fired up type guy. That's always been kind of lead by example. And I think, you know, that comes from both my parents. It was never like, you know, they weren't going to fire us up to do anything, but they were going to show us, hey, we're going to get out here and work with you. We're going to do it. And I think, I mean, luckily we have a group of people that like to have fun, and we kind of keep it lighthearted, and everybody makes fun of everybody, and everybody can kind of take a joke for the most part, most days. And so, but everybody knows when we get down to work, we're getting to work. And, it's worked out really well for the past couple of years. So, you know, I'm, like I said, I'm more of a lead by example type guy instead of, you know, fill them full of words and fire them up, you know, in the right moment.
Yeah.
If I feel like I have something worth saying, I'll say it. But, for the most part, I'm more of the quiet, lead by example guy.
Finding Mastery is brought to you by AquaTrue. We all know how important hydration is to performance and recovery and well-being, but it's not just about how much you drink. The quality of your water plays a big role. And if you're like me and you don't fully trust tap water, and I think for good reason, research by the Environmental Working Group has shown that 3 out of 4 homes in the U.S. have harmful contaminants in tap water. That's why I'm really excited to introduce AquaTrue. Their purifiers use a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process, and their countertop purifiers remove 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters. It's incredible. I can literally taste the difference in my water. Plus, the filters are affordable and long-lasting. Just one set of filters from their classic purifier makes the equivalent of 4,500 bottles of water. That adds up to less than 3 cents per bottle. It feels great to know that all at once, I'm saving money, getting the highest quality water for the Finding Mastery team, and helping make a positive impact on the environment by eliminating single-use plastics all the way around. AquaTrue comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and it even makes a great gift. And right now, because you're a Finding Mastery listener, you receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. So just go to AquaTrue.com. You spell it AquaTrue.com and enter the code Finding Mastery at checkout. Again, that's aquatrue.com. Enter the Finding Mastery code at checkout to receive 20% off any purifier that you buy there. Finding Mastery is brought to you by Ritual. They are a supplement company. They just care about what they're doing. They are flat out committed. And they've got this idea that Ritual is made traceable, which means that their products are made with a visible supply chain so that you can see exactly what they're doing, their key ingredients, the supply chain, the research, the whole thing. For companies that are showing you exactly what's on the inside, exactly how they're doing it, so that you know and feel comfortable knowing what you're consuming, I think it's a really nice touch. I think it's required. I think they are setting the standard for supplement companies. The product that I'm using right now that I flat out love is their Synbiotic. It's a 3-in-1 gut health supplement that, you know, microbiome is really important. So I need it. I think that you might benefit from it too, but of course I don't know. Go check out what they're doing. And it just gives me this peace of mind knowing that this is a company, this is a brand that doesn't cut corners. If you haven't had the chance to listen to our Finding Mastery episode with Rituals founder, Katarina Schneider, I really want to encourage you to go check that out. It's episode 428. She's awesome. It's a fascinating conversation where Kat beautifully describes her story and Rituals' mission. They are investing in their company's quality so that you can invest in the quality of your life. So I want to encourage you to head over to ritual.com/mastery to get 25% off your first month of Ritual. And that's where you can get started on their subscription model. Again, this one's just a little different. It's ritual.com/mastery for 25% off. If you had the chance to sit across and whoever you put on a pedestal to be like, that person is rad, you know, the Leonardo da Vinci's of modern times.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know if you have someone that comes to mind, but do you have someone that comes to mind?
If you would ask me this as a kid, actually right behind me, in my office, we have a fat head of Barry Sanders. You being a football guy, I'm sure you remember Barry Sanders. Mm. But you know, as a kid, he was my like childhood hero. That he, you know, was an amazing athlete. But as soon as he scored, handed the ball to the ref. The most humble guy you met.
Okay. All right. Cool. All right. Let's use that iconic image of Barry.
Okay.
What would you ask him? You had one question. True master of craft. What would you ask him? What would you want to know?
Well, if you would have asked me probably 4 years ago, I would have asked him, why'd you retire? You know, why okay. at the top of your game, why did you retire? However, I now completely understand why he stepped away when he did. You know, I get that question all the time where, why did you walk away from individual competition having won 4 times in a row? Now I completely understand. As a kid, it absolutely crushed me, you know, knowing that at the top of his career, he just kind of was like, all right, I'd had enough. Granted, there were some underlying factors, you know, the Lions, as much as I am a Lions fan, is one of the worst franchises in all sports. It was hard to watch. So as far as now, I guess it's just how do you deal with everybody wanting to know why you walked away when you did? Because I still get that question all the time. And it's tough for me to answer. I mean, my obvious answer, and I 100% stand behind, was, you know, I wanted to be a dad and wanted Lakeland to take number one over competing.
Because the word on the street is that you got scared.
Yeah, of course. That's the word on the street. Yeah.
That doesn't sound right, does it?
No, it does not sound right. And no. I still, you know. I'll save that for another day.
That's good. Like, your response was funny. It's like, yeah, that's the word on the street, dude.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah. So, no, seriously? I mean, I just made that up. I was just
I mean, obviously, because Fraser, the guy that's won the last 2 years, everybody was like, well, you just quit because you thought Fraser was going to beat you. But then the next year, he actually got second to Ben Smith. And so it wasn't – It's just people got to talk about something always. So well, Matt's a good friend of mine. Matt actually just moved to Cookeville. So he lives here now.
Okay. So you actually went though from wanting to do right by your family. Like you worked so freaking hard to do right by your family, to make them proud, but there was something else that was driving you as well. And are you clear on what that kind of maniacal, ridiculous focus really came from?
Oh man.
The reason I'm asking this is because what you've done is rare. And you know, that phrase that there's a nice little poster in the Seattle Seahawks locker room, or not locker room, but up in the coaches, one of the coaches' rooms that says, everybody wants to be great until they figure out what greatness is required.
Right.
You know, or something close to that. So what you've done is rare. And that being so, what was the driver? It had to be, I don't know what it had to be, but
honestly, I think, you know, and I tell people this, I think it was honestly the perfect storm of me being born into the family I was born into, of, you know, the hyper competitive, just full of testosterone. And I say testosterone, but the girls in our family, you know, played, you know, they were all crazy athletes. Rachel, who is 3 or 4 months older than me, would whoop up on me and Donnie, who are the one that was 12 days older than me. She would beat us in sports until, you know, until middle school. And so it was just, I think, partly that, partly having the parents that worked as hard as they could. You know, my dad worked 50 hours a week, but then would come home and was out in the barn, you know, working on whatever, coming up with any project that he could. My mom worked as a waitress for years to just make a little bit extra money for the family. And then came home and was, you know, cleaning the house. Our house was always spotless. She's OCD about everything. And so just watching them and being a part of that, but then also having, an incredible support system going through, sports growing up, having, you know, a great mentor and head coach, Coach Chaffin. And then, like I said, just working as a firefighter, that was something that I've always cherished and enjoyed. And then just having good people around me, people to push me in areas, you know, that's the beauty of CrossFit, is you can be good at something, but you're going to get beat in something else. So there's always that motivating factor of, well, they beat me in this, I've got to get better at that. And I hate to lose. I hate to lose more than I like to win. And I think that just, like I said, I think it's just the perfect storm of everything.
Yeah, it's cool. I hear that a lot. Hate to lose versus love to win. A lot of people talk about hating to lose, which, you know, it's an interesting driver, right?
Yeah.
Like it's the avoidance of hate, feeling like, you know.
Shame.
Yeah, right. It's the avoidance.
It could be anything, anything. And I feel ashamed that I lost.
I hear that a lot. What? It doesn't sound healthy, right?
No, it's not healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. CrossFit has this, you know, and the X Games has this, not X Games, but the CrossFit Games has this incredible image that people are pushing right to their limits, right to the breaking points. And sometimes they actually do bonk. Can you recall a specific time when you didn't have what it took?
Yeah. You know, so if you actually go back to that 2010 video, so in 2010, you know, we went through all these events throughout the weekend. Friday night, we did events all day Saturday. We did an event or two on Sunday morning. Well, at midday on Sunday, they take the top, I want to say, let's just say 18 for ease of numbers. They take the top 18 men, the top 18 women. They took our phones, took basically everything away from us and told us they're going to put us in this room, maybe, I don't know, 1,000 square feet tops, if that. And we don't know what the workout's going to be. We don't have our phones. There's no TV. And they're going to take 6 of us out at a time. They're going to take 6 women out first, then they're going to take 6 men out, 6 women, 6 men, 6 women, 6 men. And we don't know what the workouts are. We don't know how long it's going to take. And you're going to sit in this room and wait till it's your turn. So basically you're just, and I, at that time I was new to CrossFit, didn't really know any of the guys or girls that I was competing with. Now it wouldn't be a problem because you know everybody and you can kind of, I mean, I've learned a lot about, you know, I'm not the most outgoing person, but I've kind of learned that I can make myself do that if I have to. And so, you're literally just sitting in this room for hours. And 6 people would leave, they wouldn't come back. 6 people would leave, they wouldn't come back. And so the final event, where we get out, we start walking out, and everybody kind of takes their shirt off, you know, how we do in CrossFit. And Dave, the director of the CrossFit Games, is like, hey, don't take your shirts off. It's pretty effing hot out there. And so literally we walk into the StubHub Center, onto the tennis court, and Dave says, all right, workout is 30 hand release push-ups, climb up over this wall, 21 overhead squats, climb back over this wall, 3, 2, 1, go. And everybody's blown, like, we don't know what to do. So we just start. And so you kind of think, all right, well, maybe this is the final workout. So I go as hard as I can. And I finish the workout, only person to finish that first workout. However, as soon as you, and you had, I think, 7 minutes to do it. As soon as 7 minutes hit, you had to go around the wall. And he said, all right, next workout is, I think it was 21 power snatch at 95 pounds and 30 toes to bar. 3, 2, 1, go. And you're just kind of like, what happened? And so we start that one. And it's, if you watch the video, it's on YouTube. It's just a, it's a shit show. It's mass chaos. And so you finish that and you're just in a complete daze. It's, you know, probably 90 degrees there. I think they had like somebody that had like a temperature gun on the floor and it was like 120 degrees on the mat. And so the final workout, he's like, all right, you're doing 5 burpees over this. It's like a 6 foot wall or a 5 foot wall. And then you're going to do 3 rope climbs to 20 feet. And so whatever, didn't think anything about it. Get the burpees done, start climbing the rope. And growing up, we had a rope in the barn and, you know, PE, we'd climb rope. Well, my dad was always like, don't use your feet. That's for pussies. And so I just tried to use my arms. Well, if you do 3 workouts before that, that your arms are completely fried, I could not make it.
Isn't it crazy? This old thought, this really old thought just snaps into place.
Snaps into your head. And you're like, God, I don't need my legs. Well, all these guys are using their legs. And I'm like, okay, I'm screwed. So you see me try to make it up the rope 2 or 3 times, can't get it. There's people in the stands trying to explain to me how to use my feet. Like some dude, some guy took his shoelace out of his shoe and is trying to show me how to wrap the rope around my feet. And I'm like, bro, I don't know what you're doing. Like you're just completely out of it at this point. Well, I finally get enough. I had enough rest that I just went for it. So I climb all the way up to the top, hit the beam. And as soon as I hit the beam, I basically let go. Like I just slide down the rope and fall 20 feet. Hit my feet, fall to my butt, almost drilled my head on a piece of concrete right next to the – there's a chalk bucket that I hit. Like I said, the video is pretty funny. But anyway, I end up making it up the rope 3 times, but you had to do 3 rounds. And so the guy, Graham Holmberg, who – great athlete, he beat me. And so we finished that workout. As soon as we finished that workout, they pull us into the basement of the StubHub and make us take a drug test. And so you don't know what the score was. I don't know where I'd finished in each of the workouts. I'm like, maybe I won, you know, who knows? Well, the way I found out was when they, we came out from the basement. I looked on the big check that they had, that they gave the winner, the $25,000, and it said Graham Holmberg. And I was just like, I don't know. I just remember that feeling of just, I was just not a good feeling. And so I don't even remember what the question was, but
the point
now I'm in this dark place. Thanks for that.
when did you just get close to that feeling again?
Yeah. I was just like, I'm just like in that moment. I'm like, man, I hated that feeling.
Where is it in your body? Like right now, as you're talking
all
about?
Over, it's literally just all over. Like fingertips are kind of like, you know, twinging.
What do you hate so much about it?
I don't know. You know, I mean, I won 4 times after that and I made a lot of money doing it. And I still think back to that moment and I'm just pissed. You know, I don't know where that comes from. It just comes from deep within. That's who I am, I guess.
So you haven't had, go back to the original question, like you haven't had that moment where you broke. Or your mind broke before your body broke. Like you haven't had that experience, whether it's in your garage or.
No, I've actually had my mind. I feel like, you know, I can remember points in like 2013 where I grew up swimming, but not really swimming, not knowing how to swim. And one of the first events was in the pool. And, you know, we'd done open water swims, which you can get through an open water swim and you can kind of hide in between people and whatever. But this pool swim, it crushed me. And I looked like a complete idiot and got like 27th. And then the next event, I got like 7th. But the guy that was ahead of me, who was Jason Kalipa, who'd been a competitor for a long time, had gotten first. And so I'm just in a crappy mood, sitting in the stands. And my wife comes down there and you just got to know my wife. She's not going to hide anything, or she's not going to, you know, pat you on the butt and tell you good job if you're not doing a good job. And so we sit down and she's like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, I don't know. This sucks. Like, I don't want to be here. This is just terrible, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, all right, go get your stuff. And I'm like, what? And she goes, go get your stuff. We're leaving. And I was like, like, what do you mean? She's like, go tell Dave, if you're not having fun, you're not going to do this. And I was like, what are you talking about? She goes, I can tell when you're not having fun because you don't do the best that you can. And I'm just like, whoa, what are you like? And so from then on, I just kind of was like, all right, I got to get my shit straight. And from there, I end up winning that year again. So, so it's good to have a good support system. My wife is very, she's straightforward. That's for sure.
That's awesome. Yeah. Support and challenge, getting those two ingredients right in our most important relationships is big time. Yeah. Okay, cool. So God, so good. Thank you. Like seriously, for going back and reliving the agony of the worst moment.
It's not going to go work out again.
Yeah, there you go. Good. All right, good. So what do you do with that inner critic, that little voice inside you that says, you don't have what it takes. You can't do that shit. That, you know, like, or maybe you don't have it. Maybe you've just got a great relationship, you know, inside your own mind. But, you know, a lot of people talk about having like sometimes like a standing civil war inside them where it's like, it can be brutal.
Mm-hmm. It happens. You know, and I don't think anybody's immune to it. I think even if they say they're immune to it, they're lying. I mean, I think you've got to – what I've realized is, especially in competition, is take it one piece at a time. You know, on a team, it's a lot different. You kind of have that external motivator that you're trying to push for other people. Like, I don't want to let my teammates down, so I'm going to give it all I've got. But as an individual, man, it was a dark place a lot of times. Like there were some times where you're just like, man, this sucks. Like, I don't want to do this anymore.
How do you get through that? Because a lot of people, as soon as they feel that, this is what makes average. They feel that and then they give into it and they leave their gym, whether it's the office or the little gym, you know? So how did you deal with it?
I think it was just, you know, taking it one step at a time. I think when you start looking at the big picture, you know, like if you start to step back and look at, man, I've got, you know, I would finish the CrossFit games and I always equated it to like Christmas, you know, like you had a great Christmas, but what can I, as a kid, you know, like great Christmas, what can I get next year? You know, like the day after when Christmas was over, you had all that buildup and then now you're kind of like, man. And so if you step back and look at the, you know, like, man, this is going to take another year of blood, sweat, tears, just crushing myself. Man, I don't want to do this anymore. And then taking it, all right, let's get through today and breaking it down into smaller, you know, the sayings that my high school baseball coach was, you can't eat an elephant in one bite. That was his big thing, is you can't eat an elephant in one bite. And so it was making it small, manageable tasks and then just keep pushing. And that really, really helped over the years for sure. You know, the first year or two, I was all fired up every year. But then come three and four, you're just kind of like, all right, you know, let's do this again. And it just kind of I don't want to say – winning doesn't motivate you for sure, but when you know when you've won three or four times or three times, I was kind of like on that fourth year, I was like, all right, this is cool, but you know, maybe there's something else. And so it was just kind of taking small bites and just keep moving forward is what helped me to do it for sure.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, do you write down your goals or do you hold them?
No, internal? You know, honestly, I'm in. It's hard because everybody's like, you know, you set goals and stuff. And I'm like, no, not really. You know, like my end goal is to win the CrossFit games every year. And that's the way it's been. And it still is on a team is the same thing. And so I'm not I don't have little goals that I've tried to do that a couple times. And I just, that's not what motivates me. Like I said, the big goal of winning the CrossFit games, that's been my main goal.
When something doesn't go right, like, and it doesn't work out, do you explain that it's your fault or it's external circumstances? Like, let's say that
usually my fault.
Okay.
You know, and I've usually done something stupid, or, you know, I had a couple events at the games where, I just either redlined or, you know, pushed a little too hard. And, you know, if I do something stupid, I'm like, man, that's on me. And so I try to.
Okay. Do you say to yourself that always happens or that's a rare moment?
In where I screw up?
Yeah.
Well, I screw up every day. Just ask my wife. But yeah, no, I mean, there's, you know, there's things every day and not just in CrossFit. In life, you know, there's times where I'm like, man, I should not have reacted like that to my daughter, you know, doing whatever, you know, and so it's a constant battle, you know. You've got to kind of, you're constantly reevaluating you know, I try to hold myself accountable. You know, if I'm going to hold other people accountable, I have to hold myself accountable first.
Accountable to what?
Just anything, you know, whatever it is that I'm doing in CrossFit and in training. Obviously, if I'm training, it's almost the lead by example type thing. You know, I'm going to work my butt off and I want to be the fittest member on our team. And I'm hoping that everybody else wants to be the fittest member on our team. So that's going to make our team even better. At home, I want to be the best dad possible. And so I'm always trying to evaluate my performance in whatever I'm doing, whether it's, like I said, competing or in being a dad or being a husband. I'm like, man, I should have helped out and done a few more dishes. You know, it's just always things that I feel like I could have done better. And I think that's what makes us grow and makes us always strive to be better.
Hmm. Are you more of a tactician or like brute force? And I know there's a balance between the two, but where do you err?
I'm not very calculated, if that helps you any. Like, I don't have a training plan going into any day. I'm gonna lift heavy. I just kind of base everything off feel. But you know, I've been blessed, and I think that's something that helped me in CrossFit. Was I was a little bit more athletic than a couple of the other top guys at the time that were, may have been a little bit, had a little bit more work capacity, but I could kind of pick up on things a little faster and figure out how to do stuff more efficient. And I think that just was with my background in genetics. You know, like I said, my dad was a pretty good athlete, and, you know, he's told me that he was a good athlete until he started smoking weed. And that was our drug talk, actually, when I was a kid. He's like, you know what? He's like, you like playing sports and you're really good at it, and I think you got a shot to go to the next level. And he's like, I did too. And I started smoking weed and it made me lazy as shit. And he's like, so I don't recommend it. He's like, I can't tell you what you can and can't do because you're going to do it anyway, but I don't recommend it. And that was my drug talk with my dad. And I've never once even thought about it. So, you know, that's kind of the way I was raised right there. It was just like, hey, here's my experiences. And dad would always say, do as I say, not as I do type thing. And, you know, so that's just kind of how I've lived my life.
Okay. And then how important is the mental aspect of your craft?
I think it's huge. I think there's a lot of people that were physically fitter than I was and physically more capable than I was. But I think, like I said, that perfect storm of having people that kind of helped shape me in my mental toughness, in my just willingness to outwork people or work hard. Helped with that. So mentality, I think, is 50% of it.
That's a big number. Do you do anything on the mental side, like imagery or breathing training or meditation or, you know, confidence training, or do you do any of that?
I pray. That's about it. I don't. Yeah, I've tried to, like, you know, people like visualization, and one of the girls on our team, she really believes in visualization. I do not. I personally just doesn't work for me. I can't sit still that long to visualize and think about what's happening. And then to meditate, yeah, it's not happening for me either. You know, I think of prayer more as my relationship. I hate religion, the term religion. You know, like I feel like I have a relationship with God, and I can, you know, my prayer is not like a always just a concrete, I'm sitting down and praying, which I do that every once in a while, but it's more of an open-ended conversation with God throughout the day is kind of how I feel it. And it's been really good for me.
Mm. Okay. Brilliant. So how you doing? This is great. Like,
good.
Yeah. Okay. So a couple quick hits here. Like, where does pressure come from?
I think pressure comes from myself, to be honest. I think I put unneeded pressure on myself sometimes, you know. I still fight that battle of, oh, so and so doing this, I need to be doing this. And when I'm like, why? You know, I'm gonna give my kid a bath instead. So I still fight those inner demons every once in a while. I think it's, like I said, the way I've been brought up, that I just want to continue to get better in different areas and constantly and trying to work on those things. But I don't think nobody puts pressure on me more than myself. That's for sure.
And how would you finish this phrase? It all comes down to?
Work.
Okay. Are you more street savvy or more analytical?
I think I got a mixture of both, to be honest. I do enjoy the nuances of exercise science. You know, I grew up, I mean, my undergrad's in exercise science, and I do like the science behind it. But then I also have done it for so long, and I enjoy just coming up with stuff. And so, yes, both, to be honest.
Okay.
It's just kind of a good balance of both in those, I think.
Do you prefer to have a slow-paced environment or fast-paced environment for learning?
Fast-paced.
And then do you make fast decisions or slow decisions?
Quick decisions. If I ever, I remember in college one time, you know, we had a professor that we had three exams over the whole semester. That was it. That was our grade. And the tests were like 200, 250 answer tests. And it was exercise phys or something. And literally I go with my gut instinct on everything. And so I would always be the first one to finish. The professor would always ask me, did you cheat? And I'd say, nope. He goes, did you do well? And I said, I think so. And I got an A on all of his tests. And so I'm just, it's just, if I go with my gut usually.
There you go. Okay. Are you a rule follower or risk taker?
Risk taker for sure.
And then are you intellectually competitive? Obviously you're physically competitive, but are you intellectually competitive as well?
Yeah. Yeah. I enjoy, and in the last couple of years, I've started reading a lot more. Years ago, I was like, I'll never read. And I've really started to enjoy reading the last probably 3 or 4 years.
And then are you more self-critical or self-positive?
Self-critical.
Self-critical. And critical of others or positive of others?
I'd like to think that I'm positive of others. And most people start out at 100% with me until you show me otherwise.
And then you that's shred
sometimes,
them.
Sometimes my downfall is that I'm too trusting.
Too trusting. Okay. Yeah. And then if you were to err on one of these two sides, would you be more anxious or more depressed?
Anxious for sure. Yeah. Not depressed.
And then optimism or pessimism?
Optimism.
Yeah. So fundamental belief that the future is going to work out pretty well.
Yeah. 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 Always just kind of trust in the plan.
Perfect. Okay, good. And then like, how do you deal with failure? Is it really about the fear of looking bad, or is it the consequence or loss, or what do you do with that?
Shoot. I more of use it as a motivator, to be honest.
Yeah.
I don't really I don't like to look at things and think, man, if I could have changed that. I try to look at them as they changed me for the better at that point. You know, like I've had several, you know, one of the best people always ask questions like, if you could go back and change anything, would you change it? And, you know, obviously there are things that I would like to change, but I wouldn't change them, if that makes sense. It's like, mm-hmm. When I was just in that spot of thinking about 2010, I would love to change that, but I wouldn't change that because I don't think I would have won the next couple of years and be where I'm at today if I had won that time.
I had something similar in my professional career that happened as well. I was included in this amazing small circle event that took place in year one, and then year two I wasn't included.
Really?
And I was like, oh.
You're like, hey.
Look at that. You know, it's like I didn't get asked back to the dance, right?
Right,
and
yeah.
I'll tell you what, it lit something on fire for me. And
Yeah,
right. And I think you can relate to that. But at some point, you can't keep playing with fire because it does burn.
Exactly.
And so, you know, like to have a deeper, more eloquent, loving relationship that happened. I'm grateful for it. I don't have to be fed by the fire anymore. I can be fed.
Exactly.
There's a different passion that mm-hmm. But I'll tell you what.
Transforms, basically.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's good. I wish everybody has that. I wish everyone has that prick of pain, or deep pain or mild, anywhere on there and even constant pain to be able to change and grow and adapt and get better at being a man or a woman. Like,
yeah, buddy of mine, Jim, he always says in your greatest moment of triumph or your darkest hour, will you be enough? And it's, you know, trying to figure out who you are instead of what you do. And that's his big thing. And I like that.
Oh, flat out. So I've introduced, you know, you've heard of YOLO and FOMO, and I've introduced a new one called FOPO, fear of other people's opinions. Yeah.
Yeah.
And fear of other people's. Yeah. Because that for so many people, they're just so, they don't know who they are. So they're afraid of what other people think of them.
Yep.
And I lived by that for way too long.
Right.
And You did too? Yeah, you can spot it in other people too, quickly. Yep. Oh, look at that. They can't be themselves because they're worried about what I'm thinking about them.
Exactly.
It's awful. It's awful.
Crazy. But it's hard, you know, it's hard for people to get past that. And his big thing is a lot of people live in emotion and make decisions based off of emotion and instead of who they are. And I think that's part of our problem in society right now is that everybody makes emotional decisions 99% of the time.
What do you see in your industry in the next 5 years, 10 years? You know, because we've gone from big box to small box and CrossFit really led that. And now we've got boutique boxes where we've got, you know, call it Orange Theory or whatever the other tech bands are, you know, technology-based programs. And we've got Pilates studios all over the country. Like, and I'm not saying any of these are bad. I'm just saying we've gone from big box to boutique box. What do you see in the next 5-10 years for your industry?
I think you're going to see – I think the big thing and what you're saying about all those things is the community side of it. And that's what you're seeing is that people like – I mean, to work out with others and to enjoy what you do. And what I get so caught up in, especially in CrossFit, is people that aren't – their life doesn't depend on CrossFit. So they're not, you know, making their living doing CrossFit. But they let it become an added stress and make it so just – you know, their emotions are tied up in it and so stressed out about it. It's like, hey, CrossFit's supposed to be a stress relief, not an added stress. Working out, period. You're supposed to have some fun. It's supposed to be the best hour and a half of your day. And people get so caught up in wanting to do or, you know, oh, I'm dreading doing this and blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, then go find something that you want to do. Make sure it's physically active because physical activity is a huge part of health and wellness. But don't do something you hate. Like, go find something you enjoy. Mm. And so it's tough to – and what I get so tired of is people wanting to, you know, CrossFitters are – thrown into that category where you just want to judge everybody on what they're doing for physical activity. It's like, hey, it's like I just said, as long as they're getting better physically, mentally, who cares what they're doing?
I love it. All right, cool. What do you hope the next generation, two more questions. What do you hope the next generation gets right? And then I want to ask you, you know, how you think about the concept of mastery. How do you define it maybe even?
The next generation of just people?
Yeah.
Man, I think it's similar to what I just said is figuring out who they are first and then not making so many decisions on emotion and not getting so tied up in, you know, this is something that I work on too is not being so tied up in social media and letting that define who you are and letting people's comments get to you. It's just like, man, it's the great thing about technology is, you know, it's connected people and helped people to all over the world to connect and to learn and all that stuff. But I think it's also, we're not, you know, it's not social media because people aren't social anymore. You go to a restaurant, people are just on their phones talking to other people or they're not talking to each other face to face. And so that's, I hope we can kind of break free from that soon.
Mm. Cool. And then how do you define or think about the concept of mastery?
I think of mastery as something you're constantly aiming at. Not sure if you ever quite get there. If you're truly chasing mastery, you have to be open to self, you know, being self-critical, but learning and kind of, you know, being open to what other people think as well. I think finding mastery is a lifelong goal. I'm not sure if you ever quite obtain mastery. I think it's something that you're constantly learning and constantly trying to get to if you're truly trying to master something.
Rich, thank you again for your time. It's awesome. Great insights, really clear thinking, shared everything from pain to the joy of celebration to the deep love of family and the maniacal effort that goes into being you know, a relentless effort to be the best in your case and your best in return. So where can people find out more about you, what you're doing? And, you know,
I mean, I've got my Instagram handle and Twitter are just @RichBroning. And then we have CrossFitMayhem.com is our gym. And then Cross, I think it's the CrossFit Mayhem on Instagram, and you can kind of see what we do every day. And we have a YouTube channel that's CrossFit Mayhem, and we have a bunch of just useless nonsense on there, a lot, you know, a lot of day in the life type stuff. So if you want to check out more of what we do, check those out.
Cool. And Froning is
Froning and Friends as well. Sorry.
Oh yeah. But
we have a podcast.
One N, Froning, right?
Correct. Yep.
And then what was the last piece? You've got a pod as well.
Yeah, we got a podcast, Froning and Friends. And it's literally, we just talk about, any and everything possible. You know, it's, we do talk a little CrossFit, but not a ton. Actually, it's a lot of just life stuff, and we have fun. We have a good time.
Yeah, there you go. Kind of like your workout. Not sure
what
you're going to get.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, good. So for everyone listening, thank you. Go check out Rich and what he's up to. Follow what he's doing on all the platforms. And then thank you. Thank you for being part of this community of Finding Mastery. And if you're new to the conversation, punch over to findingmastery.net. And there's loads and scores of brilliant insights. And Rich, we're going to take some of your insights as well and slice them into minutes on mastery. So it's like under 3 minutes. Pearls of wisdom as well. So there's two,
awesome.
Got, yeah, it's awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. And then you can also follow us folks on Twitter, which is at Michael Gervais. Facebook, we've got a community. Rich, you might like to pop your head in our community. It's unbelievable. We got,
yeah, I'll check it, that out.
Yeah, it's findingmastery.net /tribe. And it's unbelievable. We've got thousands and thousands of people that are supporting each other on their path of mastery. It's awesome. And so anyways, thanks. Thanks a lot.
Cool. Thank you.
All right. All the best. Goodbye.
Thanks, Michael.
All right. Thank you so much for diving into another episode of Finding Mastery with us. Our team loves creating this podcast and sharing these conversations with you. We really appreciate you being part of this community. And if you're enjoying the show, the easiest no-cost way to support is to hit the subscribe or follow button wherever you're listening. Also, if you haven't already, please consider dropping us a review on Apple or Spotify. We are incredibly grateful for the support and feedback. If you're looking for even more insights, we have a newsletter we send out every Wednesday. Punch over to findingmastery.com/newsletter to sign up. This show wouldn't be possible without our sponsors, and we take our recommendations seriously. And the team is very thoughtful about making sure we love and endorse every product you hear on the show. If you want to check out any of our sponsor offers you heard about in this episode, you can find those deals at findingmastery.com/sponsors. And remember, no one does it alone. The door here at Finding Mastery is always open to those looking to explore the edges and the reaches of their potential so that they can help others do the same. So join our community, share your favorite episode with a friend, and let us know how we can continue to show up for you. Lastly, as a quick reminder, information in this podcast and from any material on the Finding Mastery website and social channels is for information purposes only. If you're looking for meaningful support, which we all need, one of the best things you can do is to talk to a licensed professional. So seek assistance from your healthcare providers. Again, a sincere thank you for listening. Until next episode, be well, think well, and keep exploring.